Prairie Sportsman Studios. This is Sporting Journal Radio. Heard in Minnesota, the Dakotas, Wisconsin, and online at sportingjournalradio.com. This is Sporting Journal Radio, presented by OnX. Know where you stand with OnX.
All right, welcome to the show. I am Brett Amundson. Thank you for tuning in on this station right here, or any of the other stations across the region on the Sporting Journal Radio Network, by streaming the show on demand, by downloading the podcast, or by watching it right here on the Sporting Journal Radio YouTube channel, the Facebook channel, our Instagram, TV. I don't remember where else. It's probably all over the place. I got two fighting dogs in the background, and I got a big show for you this week. We're going to talk to Eric Osberg as we get ready for the governor's fishing opener. What is he going to use for the opener? You don't have to be in Otter Tail Lakes country to utilize these techniques. They might work where you're fishing, or come join us in Otter Tail Lakes country. We'll talk a little bit more about what to expect there next weekend. Joe Henry's going to talk about what he's going to use up on Lake of the Woods if you want to go up there for the opener, or maybe you want to do a little bit of a different technique. They're talking about two different techniques, so you're going to have some options to help you pick out the right presentation for the opener this year. And then Ben Bredigan is going to join us, and we're going to talk turkeys. In fact, I got a turkey story that I'm going to share about how the OnX Hunt app worked for me and helped me be successful this turkey season. You're saying, okay, yeah, the app, what'd you do? You found a landowner name? No, I utilize some of the features on that app. Dan, I've told you a little bit about that, and we'll talk a little bit about how that app helped me out. Can you hear the dogs fighting in the background, by the way?
Oh, of course. Yeah. But I'm almost numb to it. We hear that so often in our households. It's almost not about that sound.
Tiny. Yeah, well, that was Mika barking. I took Tiny's collar off because it jingles so much. I'm like, well, I'll just take her collar off, and then we won't hear the dogs. No, they are going at it hard right now. And they're being real noisy. Anyway, so I shot this turkey. We're going to tell the story about how I shot it and how I used the OnX app coming up later in the show with Ben Bredigan, because it was really cool. It wasn't your typical way of how you'd think you'd be able to use a hunting app to be successful. I used it kind of uniquely. So I'll tell you about that in a little bit. But what we're not going to talk about in that I want to tell you about is how I ended up shooting this turkey, Dan. And I went up with Corey Loeffler, and we had a crew of guys up there. We did some dog training. Tiny had two of her brothers along with Corey Loeffler's dogs, Bonnie and Rue. And so we had Tiny, Huck, and Coda, and it was just a wild mess. So you think this is crazy what you can hear in the background, having all those puppies. It was a good time. Now Tiny's barking at her reflection in the window again. Gosh, it's hilarious having puppies. Anyway. It was a good time. And then Steve Nosbusch came over, and then he and I went out and hunted. And then Corey and Lucas Carlos went and hunted Saturday afternoon, and we split up and went to different properties. And so Steve did the calling for me. We found this tom, and we set up on the edge of this field, and this tom started working his way towards us. And Steve's like, okay, get comfortable. So I'm trying to find a tree to kind of lean back against, but all the trees are right on the edge of this field. So if I'm going to lean up against with my back onto a tree trunk, I'm going to be exposed out into that field. So I'm like, So I kind of got to sit back behind the trees. There's some grass at the bottom of them. So I'm basically laying on my belly, looking through this grass behind these trees. And there's a couple of downed trees, some logs right in front of me. And then one standing tree. So I'm like, I'm gonna try to brace myself between the standing tree and the down trees. I'm gonna rest my gun barrel on the log as kind of a shooting platform, shooting stick type situation. And I'll be able to just lay here on my belly until that turkey gets into range. Piece of cake. No. I don't know how long it took. I wish I would have timed it. I don't know how long it took that turkey to come, but I was so stiff and starting to shake. All my muscles were cramping up, my back, my stomach, both my arms. My arms are starting to shake so much. I could hear Steve kind of laughing behind me because he could see it, that I finally took my right arm and I jammed it up against this tree to try to just keep myself from shaking and try not to shake the tree the whole time too. So I'm sitting there and I'm trying to get, and that turkey's just like, he's kind of eating. He leaves a hen. He's kind of eating and coming over. And then he'd strut once in a while and gobble a little bit. And I was looking through so much grass that You know, when you're looking through so much of that stuff, you lose your depth perception a little bit. So I was trying to judge how far away he was. And then finally he got into range, had no idea we were there. We weren't using a decoy. So he had no, he just came right to the call. Steve did a great job tricking him. And finally we're like, yeah, that's in range. So I was able to like make a whole bunch of dad noises and come up out of my pose, and then just kind of got up on my knees a little bit, and he just had no idea, and I was able to shoot him. But then I did a little video. I'll be honest, I'm shaking a little bit right now.
Yeah.
And part of it is because I held that pose for so long, and I thought I, you know, you always misjudge your pose, like, oh, I'll have time to rearrange a little bit before he gets here.
I'm comfortable. Shouldn't be a big deal, right?
Yeah. Well, we sat back there and we spotted that Tom. We actually spotted him first out over there by that tree. He crossed the field and then we met up with him. We saw him there. Steve started calling. Nice job calling, by the way.
Hey, thank you.
Brought him right into 35 yards. Got to shoot the 20 gauge with the boss Tom. I should share that video here. Well, I did a little bit of video talking to the camera, talking to my phone. And I was shaking so bad. And part of it was the nerves, but a bigger part of it was like, my body was going into convulsions from holding that pose for so long. But in any case, got the deal done.
Man.
Got the turkey, was successful finally this year. Dan, and I switched the shotgun. I know you've been bow hunting this year, but I switched the shotgun. I used Boss Tom, which was nice. Dan, I got my Delta Waterfowl magazine the other day. I know you are now a member because you got your membership through Public Land Tees. It's part of that deal. Did you get your magazine yet?
Oh, I probably did. It's probably sitting in Woodbury.
That's right.
4 hours away from my mailing address, but yep. I'm sure it's waiting in my mailbox. Might be delivered to me this weekend.
So I paged through it and got it the other day, and I thought this was interesting to learn that there is a new North American duck species.
Ooh-hoo-hoo-hoo.
Any guesses? What do you think it might be?
Well, no, there are so many, there's just so many combinations, you know, even you go from country to country to continent to continent, different ducks and species and combos and hybrids and whatnot.
Yeah.
Well, I couldn't even begin to put together.
And this duck was thought to be a subspecies or some sort, not really a hybrid, but I think, yeah, it was long been considered a subspecies of the mallard. It's the Mexican duck. So I'll give you a close up shot of it right there. The Mexican duck. Was considered a subspecies of the mallard, but last June, the American Ornithological Society deemed that Mexican ducks are a separate species, now known by the scientific name of, it's Latin. But they did a bunch of DNA analysis and genetic studies to indicate that mallards, black ducks, mottled ducks, and Mexican ducks are closely related, yet distinct. And because black ducks and mottled ducks are considered by scientists to be separate species from mallards, ornithologists have decided that Mexican ducks should be their own species as well. AOS had previously decided in 1983 that Mexican ducks were a subspecies of the mallard based on extensive studies in the 1970s. And they've now reversed that decision in part because a 2017 study showed genetic evidence suggests that hybridization is not as widespread as previous believed. You can find Mexican ducks. They breed in northern and central Mexico, west central Texas, southern New Mexico, and southeastern Arizona, and seem to be expanding their range because they're finding more and more of them up in the United States. So a new duck in the North American waterfowl species.
Good Cinco de Mayo present for all of us waterfowlers.
That's right. Hey, Minnesota, you know, we've been waiting. Everybody's been asking, when are we going to get our new regs? When are we going to find out about some of these potential changes, early teal, stuff like that in Minnesota? I talked to Steve Courts the other day, and he said they are close to getting it signed. I think the commissioner next week is going to have a look at everything and make a decision, and then they'll release the details maybe right away, could be a couple of weeks, but I would say we're within a couple of weeks of finding out what hunters in Minnesota should expect this fall when it comes to waterfowl regulations. Dan, I've been eating goose tacos the last couple of days. And this has nothing to do with goose tacos, but as you know, we like to eat wild game. And with the fishing opener coming, it's perfect timing. I got my new Hank Shaw book in the mail the other day. This is his fifth cookbook, and this one is, I think, kind of the first one dedicated to fish species. Mm-hmm. So he's going to be doing some book signings and some different things with this book. And he's going to be coming through Minnesota. In fact, we're going to be part of a date coming up in July, I believe. We're still working out the final details, but I think we're going to bring Hank Shaw here to Western Minnesota and do a book signing, have a Hank Shaw inspired meal, probably some adult beverages. So watch for that. Listen for that here on the show. And follow Sporting Journal Radio on all the social media platforms for all the details on Hank Shaw coming to Minnesota. And did you see this, Dan? You know, we get big bluegills here in Minnesota. We got the big bluegill initiative now going strong, and that's something that hopefully will bring even bigger bluegills. But our growing season is so much shorter here in the north compared to the south. When you hear about those big bluegills and big sunfish, you always hear about down south, and Lake Havasu in particular, you hear about a lot. And this just came across. This is when we recorded this, I just saw this before we started recording this. And at the Bass Tackle Master of Lake Havasu, Arizona, the new pending world record red ear sunfish, 6.3 pounds, 17 inches long with a 20-inch girth. It was a Wisconsinite, a guy from Wisconsin, Thomas Farcione of Waterford, Wisconsin. He's drop shot in a night crawler, and he caught this 6-pounder right... Whoopsies, right there.
God. Yeah, I don't get super excited about bluegill, especially up here.
Man.
But I'm not sure. I'd probably need new underwear if I was reeling up and that showed up. My goodness.
That is a big one. Well, we're going to continue talking about big fish. We got Eric Osberg coming up with the Governor's Fishing Open and what he's going to use. Might be a different technique than you'd expect. Maybe not. Also, Joe Henry's going to talk about techniques that he's going to use on Lake of the Woods for the opener. And Ben Bredigan and I are going to talk about my successful turkey story and how I utilize the Onyx app to be successful. All coming up here on the show.
Devil's Lake is legendary, and this summer has been legendary for walleyes. Don't miss out. Call Haybale Heights Campground and Resort today to book one of their modern cabins on East Bay. The cabins are furnished with a full bathroom, kitchen, and all the amenities like high-speed internet, and are clean following CDC guidelines. Staying at Haybale Heights gives you full access to a private boat launch, fish cleaning station, and beach area. Learn more at haybaleheights.com. That's haybaleheights.com. Plan your trip to legendary Devil's Lake today.
Well, my turkey season's over, finally. It's been a couple of years since I shot a turkey. I was trying to bow hunt for a while there and just struggled with it. And then where I live now, there's just not great numbers of turkeys out there. And I just wasn't excited to go after them with a bow anymore. And I finally this year, I said, I'm getting back out there. Corey Loeffler invited me to do some hunting. And I said, yep, I'm going to come up there. And I'm not even, the bow's not even coming out of the case. Like, I'm just going straight up with a shotgun. In fact, I borrowed his 20-gauge. Oh, yeah, here's a picture. Borrowed his 20-gauge and a Boss Tom and got the deal done. And there was some good scouting. There was some help. Steve Nosbusch did the calling for me. So it was, there was a lot of help. But I have one thing that I can credit as a major help to the success of that turkey hunt, and that's using the Onyx Hunt app. And Ben Bredigan's going to join us from Onyx right now. Ben, how's it going?
Going fantastic. I'm glad you could get off the schneid there and put a bird down.
It was embarrassing. I'm not going to lie. It's been a struggle.
Home hunting. Don't do that. Turkeys are made to shoot with shotguns.
Yeah. You know how many people have been telling me that? And you know, ever since I've kind of come to that conclusion, and part of it's also been an ethical thing, and we discussed this quite a bit on this last trip last weekend at turkey camp, just the ethics of bow hunting a turkey. If you're not trying to take that headshot or you know, the next shot with a different type of broadhead, it really becomes an ethical shot, because that target that you're aiming for on a turkey's body is very small, and it's hard to see. Like, when you look at a turkey's body, like the anatomy of a turkey, Ben, I remember the first time I shot a turkey and I cut it open to take the breast meat out, and I was like, where are the breasts? Like, it's not your typical bird shape. that you'd expect, like from a pheasant or a goose or something like that. It's a different shape. So the body shape is a little bit different, and you're shooting, it's hard to hit that with a bow. So a shotgun, it just ends up being a more ethical solution from what I'm learning about the more turkey hunting that I do.
Yeah, they end up looking like a beach ball, especially when they're strutting. And then you realize is there's just not much there. And there's a couple of tricks to do it, but
sure.
There's still a fair margin for error, but glad you finally picked up the boomstick.
Yeah, I'm all about using the shotgun now. But I'll tell you what, I wanted to have you on, and I wanted to talk about this a little bit. There's some turkey pictures right there. Where to aim when turkey hunting? So I mean, that's a small target. I mean, it's definitely doable, and obviously a lot of people have done it, but it can definitely be a challenge. But Ben, we hunted pretty hard, and we were like running and gunning. So there was no ground blinds. We were just out there trying to find turkeys, get an ambush location. We did have a strutter decoy that we could go out there, and you could do a little bit of sneaking if you wanted. Otherwise, we were trying to find a place to hide and then call them to us. And we got pretty close a couple of times. I got some pretty cool footage. I was mainly working the camera most of the day, the first day. Second day, shotgun was in my hand. We did a little bit of filming. And then it was two of us, me and Lucas Carlos, doing some hunting. But pretty much the second day, we said, you know what? We're leaving the cameras. Let's just grab the guns. Let's go. You go that way. I'll go this way. And we came to this property. And Corey and Lucas went to the west side, and I went to the east side. And Corey said, well, you could try this. There's some trails through the woods here. So I went up, and I'd never been on this property before. And this is going to put Dan on there, I suppose. Hey, Dan. All right. So let's just look at this property here for just a second. So being that I'd never been on this property before, I was using OnX to kind of chart a path to figure out where I wanted to go. And I also knew I wanted to know how long it was going to take me to work my way through here. So I used the tracking feature, and I started up on that top left track that you can see there. I started there, and I started working my way to little clearings in the woods, all the way out to the ag fields. And the field on the right there was ag. And we'd seen turkeys in that field the day before when we were scouting. So I popped up on that top one, right by your cursor right there, so I could look all the way down to the southeast with my binoculars to see if there was anything there. And I saw one hen, and that was the top hen mark. So I marked a hen there. I didn't see anything else. But since I did see some activity out there, I wanted to be able to see the rest of the field, but I didn't want to expose myself. So I backed into the woods, found another trail, and worked my way down. As I was coming down that trail, I heard a gobble down to this field to the south. So I was like, ooh. So immediately got a little tingly and, you know, got into a little bit of a crouch as I'm walking through the woods. Just naturally, you kind of crouch and like, okay. So then I snuck down and was able to look out across that field from that next vantage point, right by where you see the Tom waypoint there. Waypoint will actually come later in the story, but where that is kind of where I was able to look out. Still didn't see any turkeys, and worked my way down to the south line there. And this field to the south, I didn't have permission for. So I could walk the property line basically, and I was going to try to come. There was a little opening. There's a point of trees that came out, and then there's a little clearing, and then an island of trees along the property line where that X is right there. So I was going to try to get there and call that Tom up onto the property that I have for permission for. And I walked back and forth across that and never saw him. So I ended up working all the way back and then came back down along the south line back to the west. And then met up with the guys, and we broke for lunch and did some dog training and did a few other things. So we came back and decided to, like I said, work on the dogs, hang out, do whatever. And then when we decided to go back out later that afternoon, I figured that property was done. There was probably four Toms and three Jakes around that property that we kind of tried to get on, couldn't find them, and it was hot. It was like about 80 degrees now. So I figured we were going to be doing, we're going to just try to like spot some birds, do some short walks, whatever, maybe try to get in the woods, get into some shade. And Corey's like, all those woods back at that spot we hunted this morning, those birds probably are moved back into those woods now. So let's go back there. So I was like, all right, well, that was a 2 hour. Let's pull this back up. That took me 2 hours. That's 2 miles. That whole track right there is 2 miles. And it took me 2 hours to do it. So I was like, okay, it's 84 degrees and I'm about to go walk 2 miles again in a couple of hours. But I knew exactly how long it took me to go to all these places. So I could time it, and I had Steve with me now, and he was not dressed for 84 degrees. He was dressed for about 45 degrees. So immediately we get it, we get 10 minutes into this thing and we're both dripping with sweat, and I got a Kelvin Light hoodie on and nothing underneath it. So like I'm dressed about as light as you can get and I'm dripping with sweat, and he's got this full on heavy hoodie. He's got big heavy pants on. I'm picking off like 500 ticks off of every part of my body, which is not enjoyable. But I basically was able to use that track that I did earlier to know exactly where I wanted to go and how I wanted to get there and how long it was going to take me. So we basically made that same path again. And only this time, when we got up to that top spot where I glassed the time before, Steve had the binoculars this time. And I said, all right, I'm going to just stay tucked into the woods here, Steve. You just sneak to the edge and glass down that field, just like I did earlier. And as we're sitting there, he's glassing over the whole thing. And he doesn't see anything. So he turns and starts to come back, and I just catch a little flash of black by the second hen mark. And there's like one oak tree out in the middle of the field, and I see a little flash of black feather. And I'm like, Steve, get down and glass by that tree right there. And sure enough, there's a tom, and it's starting to run straight south towards that X. So I don't know if it busted us or if it's just on the move or what's going on. So again, we back out, follow that same path all the way down. And now we stop in the corner of the woods where that tom waypoint is. And he's strutting on the field. He's out in the field strutting where that X is and where that tom waypoint is. And Steve starts calling, and he's with a hen. And we're like, there's no way we're going to be able to call this guy all the way across. He may have already busted us. He's got a hen with him. There's no way he's going to come all the way across this field to where we are. And as soon as Steve hit that slate call, that tom had just tucked into that island of trees. He just walked into the trees. And I was like, ah, all right, it's over. And he went, wah, wah, wah. And all of a sudden that tom went, pff, came right back out, turned, and started working his way down the field towards us. And he left that hen in the dust and came right up to us. And I shot him at 35 yards. Couldn't believe it. And and honestly, without that, because there were a couple of times where I was walking through the trees where I knew which part of that field I wanted to get to look out for a vantage point on that field. But there was a couple splits in the trail and I couldn't remember which way I went that morning. And without looking at that track that I did, I wouldn't have known which way to go. So I give that Onyx Hunt app a whole lot of credit for my success this year. So there's my really long-winded turkey story, Ben.
Well, that's awesome. And you know, the cool thing, what I love about it is now I can see, you know, we're talking about it, whatever, and I can see exactly what you did. And that's fun, you know, to retell that story. So kind of that reliving aspect about it is fun as well.
It was great. We ate most of it that night. Corey cooked it up on the flat top. He's got a hunting shack. And, he told me about this hunting shack for a couple of years and I didn't really know what to expect. It's an old farmhouse that's been in the family for a long time, but they put a flat top in the kitchen, which I just think is awesome. That's like the only thing they've done to the house as far as like renovation or anything like that. They installed a flat top. As I think Corey, he won't leave the house without one. He's got one at home. I think I'd imagine the next vehicle he gets, he's just going to retrofit the back end of it with a flat top. Like he's going to do a custom van with a flat top in it. And I cooked up a bunch of turkey and bacon. And I think he called them, they were bomb turkey wraps. I think they were delicious in any case. But.
Yeah, I don't doubt it. Anything that his kitchen tends to be pretty dang good.
Now, have you done any turkey hunting yet?
Yep, I've done a little bit here. This weekend I'm actually headed up north, so I'm gonna try to chase some big timber birds up here. So in an area I've never been to before, and not, you know, I could go out around here and kill a bird fairly easy, but I think it'd be fun to go mess around up in the big woods and see, you know, see if you can't get just kind of a different vibe to it.
It's getting later in the season. Are you bow hunting or are you gun hunting?
No, so I'll be gun hunting. I went out with a few folks. That's my hunting so far. But
gotcha.
You know, really, if I could, a lot of people get out first 2-3 weeks of the season in April, and for me, you know, we've talked about the weather. It's kind of been terrible, and even if it's good weather years, it's kind of a take it or leave it deal for me. I would much rather start hunting even the first week, second week of May is when I really like to start hunting, because early in the year you'll have birds all grouped up. The toms are less likely to come off of the hens, and it just kind of ends up being frustrating. But as you get later in the season, those hens will go to nest during the day, lay on their nest, and the gobblers are pretty much running around trying to find another hen. So I've always said, if you strike a turkey after, let's just say 10 a.m., and he's gobbling good, there's a really high likelihood that he is going to, you know, come to you, and hopefully you'll kill him. So, but side with, you know, fishing opener and other people, you know, other things to do. But if you can get out, if you haven't filled your turkey tag yet, this is probably the best time from here on out to chase them. So
do you use permethrin?
Yes. Yes, liberally. I'll spray my clothes, you know, the day before, or, you know, a lot of the times I'll spray them before the season and then maybe reapply one more time. But yeah, especially when you talk about those seed ticks, those tiny, tiny, tiny ones, you know, in the South, they were terrible. You could get in and you could have 2,000 of them on you. So I'm a big fan of permethrin.
Yeah, I did not use it. The other guys did. Corey, I never saw Corey pull a tick off of them the whole time. And I don't know what this, there you go. I pulled off so many ticks, and the deer ticks too. And, you know, you're at turkey camp for a few days. There's no showering, and there's, you know, you're sleeping in your clothes half the time. So there's a couple of times where all of a sudden I did change clothes one day, and I took my shirt off, and I had a deer tick that had bit into me over here. I think I had 3 wood ticks throughout the time that I pulled off me somewhere that had bit into me. So I came back. And I know they say that it has to be bit in for 24 to 48 hours for there to be, you know, for potential for infection. But I didn't want to take any chances. And Corey's like, go to the doctor, get 2 pills of doxycycline. Don't even hesitate. And I came home and I took a shower. And when I took my shirt off, where that little tick had bit me was a really big bite mark. Now, it wouldn't probably qualify as the traditional bullseye mark, but it was a big enough red mark, bite mark with a circle around that I was like, I went into the clinic the next day and got some antibiotics for it immediately. So don't mess around with, I don't want to mess around with Lyme disease, man.
No, gosh, no. And one thing about that permethrin is don't use it like insect repellent. It's made for your clothes. You don't want to get that stuff on your body, 'cause it's a little rough, but I wonder, like, I've got a bunch of doxy from my dogs. I wonder if it's sanctioned if I just, after I get out, just throw a couple of those in there.
I'm sure. I mean, I'm not a doctor. I played one on the radio before, but I'm do not come to me for medical advice. I'm just going to say that right now. But
well, you're as close as I have to a doctor right now. So
yeah, well, it's doxycycline. So I don't know what the difference, maybe the dosage amounts are maybe a little bit different, but I don't know how different it is for dogs. But anyway, Ben, all right. People should have the Onyx Hunt app for everything. Turkey hunting really helps, of course, like it did for me this year. Where can people get it?
You can go on iOS on the App Store and download it there, as well as the Google Play or onxmaps.com. And remember when you sign up, you get a free 7-day trial to check it out. And if you don't like it, no harm. So once you try it though, and once you start using it, you're going to be hooked. And also right now we've got a Mother's Day sale. So if you use the code MOM, you get 30% off on your purchase. And that's a pretty dang good deal.
Absolutely. OnyxMaps.com. Ben Bredigan, good luck with your late season. Hey, Dan, good luck with your late season turkey hunting, and thanks for being on the show this week.
Yeah, appreciate it, guys.
OnX Hunt. Ever heard of it? Next time you see that guy at your local shop who always punches his tag on a stud whitetail, ask him. He'll tell you about the most trusted source for mapping, with nationwide landowner names, private and public land boundaries, including walk-in areas, map tools to mark spots, and the ability to view your maps without cell service. And that's just scratching the surface. It's your time to be known as the big buck guy around town. Download the leader in hunt mapping on Google Play or the App Store. OnX Hunt. Know where you stand.
Well, we definitely could talk more about turkey hunting here on the show, but why would we when the fishing opener is as close as it is? And honestly, 99% of the people watching or listening to this are probably rigging up their rods right now in anticipation. I'm planning to be up in Otter Tail County for the governor's fishing opener this year, and Eric Osberg from Otter Tail Lakes Country is going to join us to talk about what I can expect when I hit the water up there. I don't know where I'm going yet, Eric, but you're guaranteeing me a limit of walleyes, right?
I did not guarantee you a limit of walleye. That was misunderstood. That was a miscommunication on Dan's part, probably. That's my bad.
It's usually Dan's fault, for sure.
Right. Yeah, let's just blame Dan.
You can never guarantee Brett a limit of anything or one of anything. Let's be real here. Hey, so let's put the blame on Brett on this one.
I can mute you, you know. Aha, the power of the guy with the controls. Yeah, no, he's actually, Dan's absolutely right. There's no guarantees in fishing anyway, no matter where you're going, what you're using. There's never a guarantee of limits. Even, you know, that's the thing. This is a discussion for another day, but people think when they hire a guide, they're guaranteed a limit, and that's not a guarantee as well. But Eric, how do you think things are going to look for the opener this year?
Well, and I know what I'm going to do, okay? So I'm not saying this is the right thing to do, but this is going to be my approach to the opener. And I as you know, or may or may not know, I love pulling crankbaits. I love stick baits. I love crankbaits. I love a jig and a minnow, as effective as that can be, just doesn't always do that for me. And so last year on the opener, I went out at midnight. And I started, you know, with a jig and a minnow, and there weren't any fish underneath me. And so I'm like, well, I got to find, you know, before I can catch these things, I got to find them first. So I don't know if anybody else does it, but I'm like, I'm going to start pulling cranks. That picture right there, Willie caught that walleye on a crankbait on the eve of, you know, not the eve, but opener night. It was in like 8 feet of water. And you know, that spot that we caught that fish in, we would normally run a jig and a minnow. And I decided, you know what, I need to cover water. So I pulled crankbaits. I'm a big fan of flicker shads. I'm not sponsored by them or anything like that. I just really like flicker shads. So a number 7 or a number 5 flicker shad. And just think of the amount of water you can cover pulling a crankbait at 2 miles an hour versus vertical jigging. Or even drift jigging or snap jigging. So I guess the advice would be somehow, some way, cover water. If you know the lake that you're going to and you know where the fish should be, obviously you can start there and you can have a slow presentation. But don't be afraid just because it's early in the season. Those fish will chase a bait. I mean, they big bait catches big fish, and big bait catches aggressive fish. And that's really what you're looking for. You don't want lethargic walleyes. You're looking for feeding hungry walleyes. If you're not into throwing or trolling, here's what I would recommend for you, Brent, right? You're coming up to Otter Tail County. I would recommend an X wrap or a husky jerk, right? and it's not deep diving, and you can, like, you're bass fishing. You're casting towards shore. You could be off the break. You could be on the break. You know, you could be in 4 to 10 feet of water. I know that's a long, you know, that's a big window, but you're casting up shallow, and you're working that husky jerk or that stick bait back to the boat. You know, a jerk and a pause, a jerk and a pause. The boy and I out, we were out last year, and it was right about that time of year, the middle of May, and we were targeting smallmouth bass, and so we were throwing these stick baits. You know, jerk and pause, jerk and pause, jerk and pause. Yeah, like a number 7 or a number 10 even. I mean, you can get a nice big husky jerk. Some of my favorite colors are like a golden black or a golden blue. And you get to cover water that way. And the cool thing is when those fish hit, they hit hard. They smack that bait. And then it's kind of game on.
So this year, the opener is on the 15th. We had an early ice out. Normally, we'd be talking about our fish post-spawn, what's the water temperature, what's going on. I gotta think they're post-spawn at this point or near the end of it. I haven't heard much about where walleyes are at right now. What do you think's going on with them?
Well, I do know this. The DNR in Otter Tail County, anyways, they wrapped up they were able to do their egg stripping and all that stuff. Last year they weren't allowed to do it or couldn't do it. But last week is when they wrapped up their egg, you know, I don't know, gathering or whatever you call it, right? So we're post spawn, right? They're the, you know, water temps. It's weird though. It's been, and I've heard this from a lot of guys, you know, water temps are in the low to mid 50s right now. I was out last night, and normally you'd start to see some crappies in the shallow, but the last two times I've been out looking, I have not seen a single crappie, you know, visually. I did get a report from a buddy. He got a bunch of crappies in that 6 to 8 foot range. Right. But they're, you know, so as far as the crappies, bluegills, those types of things, they're pre-spawn. They're not there yet, I don't believe. But the walleyes and the pike, they're in post-spawn mode. But again, whether you're fishing deep, whether you're fishing shallow, my approach is try to locate a fish, right? And the best way you can locate a fish is to move quickly, cover water quickly. So water temps are I guess what I would call normal for this time of year. The weather hasn't really made up its mind. You know, it's hot and then it's cold and then it's hot and then cold. But so I'm going to be out at midnight and I'm going to be pulling cranks. That's what I'm going to do.
I saw that Randon had a pretty nice crappie yesterday, it looked like.
Yeah, he's and I think he's in. I talked with him the other, you know, yesterday before he went out. I was going to Rush Lake. I don't know where he went, but he wasn't with us on Rush Lake. And again, he's focusing right now on that 6 to 8 foot range, right? Like they're not up the crappies anyways, aren't up in anything yet. They're just kind of, maybe they're staging, maybe they're just right off of that. But yeah. If you really want to know how to catch them, call Randon.
Call Randon. Yeah. I didn't know that you were out. I saw that the otter was out with, here's Randon's walleye. Before we talk about what the otter was doing. Yeah, that's a nice one. Randon with lockjaw.
Yeah. Yeah. So, yeah, that's a pig.
So I saw the otter with Nicole Jacobs in Otter Tail County last night.
Have you ever met Nicole?
I have met Nicole, yeah.
She's awesome. Like what an ambassador for the sport, right? And I had visited with her, you know, via, you know, Instagram direct message, whatever, and stuff like that. But it was, we had the inner otter and her had, I get confused. Is it me or is it all three of us had a good time.
Okay. You were with too. I didn't realize.
I was running the boat. The otter was, you know, there too.
We don't want to let people peek behind the curtain there.
No, you don't want to break that wall.
That's right.
The And what's cool about Nicole is she has a history in Otter Tail County. She, as a kid, she came up and, you know, her family had a cabin on Rush Lake. And so this was her first time back in a while. And so we checked all of the normal spots that we could for crappies. We caught some accidental pike. We didn't find the mother load of crappies, but Nicole's a good stick, and she's a bass head at heart. And so, I kind of grew up bass fishing. So anytime you can spend time in the boat with somebody that can appreciate the awesomeness of largemouth or smallmouth bass, especially in the middle of walleye world, it's a good time in the boat. And so she's actually with Randon today.
Hmm.
So we'll see how their adventure plays out. And I guess what I would say about Nicole being here is she was really excited to be a part of this Governor's Fishing Opener because she has that history in Otter Tail County. And she has a tournament coming up. She's a tournament angler, so she has a tournament opening weekend. And we're like, well, we don't want to let that stand in the way of you participating. So we're like, why don't you come before the opener? Right? We can go pan fishing. So she was able to make it work before the opener, and she stayed at Blade Owl Beach Resort on Rush Lake. And I guess, and you and I have already talked about this a bunch on the program, but one of the things that I'm excited about the 2021 Minnesota Governor's Fishing Opener is right now we've got people registered to stay at 30 different resorts.
Wow.
And while that might not shine a huge spotlight on each of those resorts, at least dozens of resorts are feeling like they're getting some benefit out of the weekend, right? They're having somebody stay there, number one. They're having somebody talk about them, whether they're a social influencer or whether they're traditional media or whatever it is. So while the spotlight might not be super bright on that one spot, it's a nice wide, you know, a wide spotlight. So I'm glad she was able to come up, and I'm glad she was able to stay at Blade Owl. There's another resort on Rush Lake called Shady Grove. So somebody's gonna be staying there. Somebody's going to be staying at 30 different resorts, and that's why we do this thing, is to help those businesses and get the word out.
Well, it's almost here, Eric. It's going to be here before you know it, and in about a week and a half, you're going to be kicking back with a big beer, relaxing finally. Because you start planning for these things, 2 to 3 years in advance, right? So this is like a 4 to 5 year process that's finally going to culminate on May 15, May 16 weekend.
Yeah, we threw our hat in the ring for the 2019 opener. So we submitted a proposal in 2018 to 2019, 2019 to 2020. It's been a long road. And we have a lead committee, right? And we've been meeting at least once a month for years. And now we're at every week level. And today when I sent out the agenda, it was the second to the last meeting, right? Like we're almost there. See the finish line. Like we're going to do this one more time. And then to your point, we're going to be able to kick back. I want to find some good cigars that I can give everybody. Here's a cigar, and let's all celebrate. I guess what I would say is so many people have stepped up. You know, there's my coworkers, the committees that we have together. I mean, dozens of people have put in hundreds of hours, even more than that. Businesses have stepped up to support this. Lund Boats, Shoremaster, Thumper Pond, Lakes Area Docks and Lifts. I mean, the list goes on and on. There's a lot of people have stepped up to show support for this event, and we're just so grateful and appreciative of their hard work and their support.
Well, it is a lot of work to do it, and I'm signed up, I think, for the Lund Boats tour. And then for Panfish Paradise after that on Friday, Eric. So I'll plan on seeing you around there somewhere, I'm sure, on Friday.
Yeah, and I hopefully we can save a spot for you in Randon's boat, because like I said, he's one of the guys that's helping out on Friday and Saturday. So so yeah, bring your boat, because then you can go find your own inner otter on Saturday. But yep, we'll get you on some fish one way or another.
Very good. Well, Eric, I wish you luck. And, you know, normally I would say these walleye openers, they tend to turn into crappie fishing a lot of times. So if that's the case, great. But with it being a little bit later this year, I think it could be good. So I'm excited about it and looking forward to seeing you up there next week.
Can't wait to have you. Thanks for all your help.
Eric Osberg, Otter Tail Lakes Country, thanks for the time today on the show.
Did you know there are more than 1,000 lakes in Otter Tail County?
Yep, and I'm going to fish as many as I can. I'm an outdoorsy otter. Nothing beats a full day of fishing for me. The lakes of Otter Tail County give me plenty of options to lower my boat and snag the perfect catch. Not an outdoorsy otter? No problem. Otter Tail County has something for everyone. You just need to find your inner otter. Go to this site right here.
Well, anglers are getting excited about walleye. Well, they're always excited about walleye fishing, but they're starting to get really excited about walleye fishing again because the Minnesota opener is almost here. And to talk about walleye fishing on Lake of the Woods, we're going to bring on Joe Henry from Lake of the Woods Tourism. Joe, how you doing?
I'm doing good. And I have to admit, the tug is my drug.
Oh, yeah. The tug of the drug and the angle of the dangle, right, Joe? I think
an angle of the dangle makes a big difference, let me tell you.
Well, it does. And that was something I want to talk. I know we were going to talk a little bit about techniques on the Rainy River and Lake of the Woods and up at the angle. And having the angle of the dangle at the angle is really important.
I'll tell you what, it doesn't get better than angle of the dangle. The angle
at the angle.
Yeah, you know.
I finagled.
It's a special place anyway. Then when you got the angle of dangle going on, my goodness.
I finagled my angle I don't even know what I'm saying anymore. At the angle, the northwest angle. There was some finagling at the angling.
It'll be a bad angle for a professional like you, Brett.
I'm excited to do some angling this weekend for the opener. And Joe, Lake's going to be busy. The accesses are going to be busy. It's a tradition for people to go fishing. Sometimes people think that all the resorts at Lake of the Woods are going to be booked up for the opener. That's not always the case. So people can still make a trip up to Lake of the Woods for the opener. What do you think they can expect up there this weekend? Next weekend, I guess.
Oh, man, it's going to be good. Yeah, it's going to be good. It, you know, the water is still cold, but, you know, you got to remember, you know, May 15th, that's the latest the opener can start, and you know, by definition. And it's going to be good. And, you know, what's going to happen is this. There's going to be fish in the river. There'll be fish adjacent to the shorelines. There'll be fish adjacent to the islands. They're going to be a near-shore structure. They're going to be hungry. And most people are going to be catching a lot of walleyes on jigs and minnows.
Jigs and minnows, that's kind of the go-to up there. Of course, gold being one of the most popular. What other colors do you bring with you, Joe?
You know, you just stole all my thunder.
Ah.
You know, when I was when I was up there in the early days, you know, I remember some old-timers, it was ice fishing in this case, and I remember I was getting out there before light, fishing the shallow bite, you know, and going after that morning bite, and I remember some of the old timers having another cup of coffee and just getting their breakfast, kind of smiling, saying, yeah, you let those rookies go ahead. Mm-hmm. We know darn well that we'll let it get a little bit light and we'll go from there. And, you know, there are some nuances to Lake of the Woods. And you said it, gold is one of them. And, you know, the reason for that is because of that stained water Lake of the Woods has. You know, tannins from the boggy area, from the watershed south of us, stay in the water. It's not dirty water, it's stained water. It's got a little brown coffee color tint to it. And quite frankly, that plays into our advantage because, you know, on real, real clear water lakes, a lot of times it's the golden hour in the dark when the walleyes are feeding the most because they can sneak up on their prey. You know, they're just fish and they're going to spend as little energy as possible to sneak up and eat. So in the stained water, those fish eat all day long. And that's the great part about it. So gold, your oranges, your chartreuses, your pinks, your glow colors, or a combination thereof. And, you know, I think the other thing, Brett, is that, you know, when you're jigging on Lake of the Woods, there are some other nuances also. And one of them is, number one, what kind of minnow do you want to use? You know what? I'll tell you, in many cases, you know what, using frozen emerald shiners. If we could get live ones this time of year, they'd be great. But we normally get those in the fall. But, you know, if you could use a frozen emerald shiner, otherwise live fatheads or rainbows or spot tails, if you get those from the south of Lake of the Woods, you know, whatever, they're all going to work. Here's another kicker, how to hook that minnow. You know, when you hook a minnow, If you take that minnow and you hook that hook of the minnow of the jig through the minnow's mouth out the gill, and you slide that all the way up far as you can to the jig head, and then you hook it back through about two-thirds of the way back in that minnow, on Lake of the Woods with that stained water, the walleyes aren't so darn finicky that you can absolutely get away with that. So what that does then is that when a walleye hits, you get a much, much better chance of hooking that walleye. Tell you another little tip. Because of the stained water, you know, you can get away with a bigger jig. And that's important. And I'll tell you why it's important is because, you know, if you got people that aren't real avid anglers on your boat, it does them a lot better to feel the bottom and bounce your jig off the bottom with a heavier jig. If there's some wave action, if there's some wind, if you're in deeper water, whatever the case might be, it's that much easier. In some lakes, when it's real gin clear water, the old rule of thumb is you got to cast that thing away from the boat and then you use the lightest jigs you can per the conditions. But, you know, when you're in stained water, that's off. In fact, you will absolutely catch more walleyes on Lake of the Woods by anchored up in vertical jigging right over the side of the boat than you will if you're drifting or moving with your trolling motor. So it's just kind of an interesting body of water. There are some nuances to it. Oh, the other thing I should mention to you is that when you're a couple of things. You know, when you're jigging, I like to, almost like ice fishing, is kind of jig and let it sit in the strike zone. For me, that strike zone is about a foot off. Jig and let it sit in the strike zone. But I'm going to pound that bottom. It's like a dinner bell. You know, Lake of the Woods, there's a lot of critters that the walleyes eat that come out of that mud. Other minnows feed in the mud, and that all is triggering. You know, the other thing is, sometimes, you know, they don't want it active. If it's really cold water and they're in kind of a neutral mode, you're better off just kind of shaking that jig and kind of holding it still. And every once in a while, they're not going to always come by and give you that quintessential tap like you're used to feeling with a walleye. Sometimes what I'll do is I'll steadily just raise my rod a little bit. Raise my rod. And every once in a while, I'm just going to raise my rod up just to check it. And if I raise it up and it feels like there's a weed on there, I'm setting that hook. And it's amazing how many walleyes that will just hang on that jig a little bit. And most people don't even know they're there.
I've set the hook on so many weeds that have been lots of weeds. Sometimes sticks, but also fish too. So yeah, you feel a little bit of weight. I mean, what's this saying? Hook sets are free, right? So,
well, yeah, but you know, so, I mean, depends on what kind of minnows you use. Minnows aren't. So when you set that hook, a lot of times you lose your minnow.
Do we have an image?
Let me tell you this: on Lake of the Woods, we really don't have as many weeds. I mean, we really don't. Right. You know, a lot of times you're going to be fishing where it's clear, and it's not like an inland lake, you know. So it's just a little bit different that way.
Do we have an image? Did we have an image of one of those minnows? How you're hooking that minnow on the hook? Is that coming?
Yeah, we did. I think a jig with a frozen emerald shiner on there.
Where's that? Does Dan got that, or do you have that, Joe? Can we show that?
I think Dan has that.
Coming up. Yep.
Okay. Let's bring that back up again. Because you have a way that you like to hook those minnows on, don't you, Joe?
Well, I do, yeah. You know, and I because it's stained water, you can get away with hooking that minnow. You can see, hook it through the mouth, out the gill, and then push it all the way up as far as you can, and then hook it through the midsection of the body. But, you know, what that does is that ultimately makes it so that when a walleye hits that thing, you're going to have a much better chance of hooking that walleye. And like I said, in that stained water, they don't care. You know, it's scent, it's flash, it's color, it's, you know, they're going to come up and hit that thing. And jigging is such a fun bite this time of year. You know, as the season goes on and those fish get spread out, when the water warms up, we might probably switch to harnesses and maybe even a little bit of cranking. But right now, that jig bite for the, you know, May and June is such a fun bite. Yeah, on Lake of the Woods, you can get out there in no man's land. I mean, there's no structure. It's flat for 10 miles, 15, 20 miles. And it's just flat, but those walleyes are roaming around, picking off schools of emerald shiners, tulubies, perch minnows, perch, bloodworms. Yeah, just there's so much food out there, but it's just a fun bite, very relaxing. It's like, hey, I got fish on my screen. Get ready, guys. Boom, 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 you know?
Well, right now, for where I'm at in West Central Minnesota, they're talking about 70 degrees and partly sunny on Saturday the 15th, which sounds about perfect. To me, that, in fact, that's the warmest day in the next, what do I got here? 10 days, 15, 14 to whatever outlook forecast I have here through, the 19th. So yeah, the next 2 weeks, that's the warmest day of the forecast right now, 72 degrees on opener. I was just talking to a friend of mine, Joe, about, he's a farmer, and we were talking about planting and how it's going and everything. He goes, wow, we really could use a little bit of rain, like a good, you know, like full day, like 3/4 of an inch somewhere in there. And I said, you know when it's going to come, and that's going to be on fishing opener, when, because you're going to try to get all your planning done so you can get in a boat on the 15th, and that's going to be the first day it rains.
Well, you know what? It's the opener, and yeah, you know, cross your fingers. But well, you know, the one thing I'll say is this: is that it's such a cool tradition in Minnesota. You know, I mean, you know, we get a little extended season up at Lake of the Woods anyway, but it's just a fun tradition. And I know for myself, we have a family fishing tournament during the opener. We've been having it for more than 35 years, and it's just a neat time for everybody. You know, I feel so good when I see kids getting out fishing too, and husband and wives and families, and you know, all that stuff is just so great for the state, for the sport.
So we have one of those family traditional trips with a fishing contest every year, and we somebody made a traveling trophy, and we've had to add plaques on. We've had to keep adding bases on to add on to the plaques because it's been going on for 30 some years like that. So just the more names you put on, you know, you just have to keep. It's not like the Stanley Cup where there's enough room for all the names. We keep making the trophy bigger for the names. And I think my name is on there the first year and maybe the third year. And hasn't been on there since. So I'm hoping, it's been terrible. But do you guys have a trophy or what's your prize in your family contest?
You know, well, let me just grab one for you here.
I need to get my name back on the trophy. Oh, there it is.
We do. Yeah, yep. So this is kind of the thing we do for our family, and we call it the Henry Fishing Classic. This is the largest fish. So we have largest fish and heaviest stringer. So you know, you get one or the other. If you have both, you can only win one trophy, so you got to take the largest fish. And, you know, just an inexpensive trophy. We barbecue. We have a couple of Diet Cokes or Diet Pepsis. I have a chance to hang out with my brothers and my nephews and some cousins and things like that. And you know what? We probably have 15 people in our contest, you know, and it's just it's family time. It's tradition. I have a couple of brothers that were very active in it that have passed away of cancer over the years. And you know, we certainly remember those guys when we're fishing but now we got some of the younger kids coming in. So it's like some of my nieces and nephews' kids. And
cool.
But that's tradition, isn't it?
Yeah. That's what it's all about right there. I'll have to try to track down a picture of our trophy too and show you what it's like maybe for next week. But Joe, if people want to get up there for opener or plan a trip for this summer to Lake of the Woods, where should they go for more info?
You know what? Check out our Facebook page at Lake of the Woods Tourism. Otherwise, check out our website, and that is lakeofthewoodsmn.com.
Northern Minnesota's Walleye Factory is a year-round world-class fishing destination. The perfect getaway this summer is just a short drive to Lake of the Woods. Fish Big Traverse Bay, the Rainy River, or visit the unique Northwest Angle. To catch big fish, you have to go where the big fish are. Plan your trip to Lake of the Woods at lakeofthewoodsmn.com. That's lakeofthewoodsmn.com.